This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. When Pink Flamingos opened 25 years ago, it was billed as an exercise in bad taste. Times have changed, but Pink Flamingos hasn't gotten any more tasteful. Too depraved for the regular movie crowd, this campy comedy became a midnight movie phenomenon in the 70s. The film has been re-released in celebration of its anniversary. On this archive edition, we have a 1985 interview with the film's director, John Waters. His other movies include Polyester, which brought back Tab Hunter, Hairspray, which gave Ricky Lake her start, Crybaby, the first film to take Johnny Depp seriously, and Serial Mom, which co-starred Patty Hearst. Pink Flamingos is about two families vying for the title of the filthiest people alive. Pink Flamingos starred two of Waters' regulars, Divine, a 300-pound man played the leading lady, as he did in several of Waters' films, and the late Edie Massey played the nearly toothless egg lady, a lady obsessed with eggs.
It's 10:30. Babs, Babs, why isn't the egg man here? I'm starving to death for some eggs. Please, Babs, come in and give me some eggs.
I'm coming, Mama, I'm coming. You can hold on.
Cotton, Cotton! Babs won't give me my eggs. Cotton, please come in here and give me my eggs.
Be in a minute, Edie. Don't you worry. I'll fire you up some, honey.
Eggs! Eggs! Eggs!
John Waters always liked exploitation films. When I spoke with him in 1985, he told me some of his favorites.
Well, I liked the Russ Meyer films very much in the beginning, the Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. I like things that were obscure ones like Door-to-Door Maniac, which starred Johnny Cash, Kitten with a Whip with Anne Margaret. A lot of the big directors today started out with exploitation films. That is the easiest way to start because I always advise film students, whatever you do, don't make a personal little arty film as your first film because it will never get shown and you'll spend all your money and you won't get any of it back. If you want to get in the film business, do something that will end up in a theater, which is an exploitation film. It's the easiest and smartest way to start out. A funny one, though. I mean, I think there's nothing against that.
Is that one of the reasons why you broke so many taboos in your movies to get attention?
Sure. When you have $10,000, $5,000 to make a feature-length movie, you have to do something that the Hollywood studios will not or could not do. And that's what we did. You have to go way out on a limb because you've got to get people's attention, even if they hate it.
The film that first got you a lot of national attention was Pink Flamingos. How did you come up with the idea for that, of making a movie about two families
vying? I was driving across the country with David Lockery, and I kept seeing trailer parks. And that's how it came to me. I thought, what's it like to live in a trailer park? And they had Pink Flamingos in front of them. And we all, at that time, loved that kind of 50s kind of, and it wasn't the look then, certainly. And we liked that kind of Jane Mansfield, all that kind of stuff. So that's how the idea came, just like the filthiest person alive. You know, I don't remember where that came from. I knew that it was a war between two groups of people, and it just sort of happened from that, from seeing these trailer parks.
That and most of your early movies were shot on location, either in an abandoned area or on the streets. Did you ever get hassled by other residents of the city or police?
We were arrested, all of us, for conspiracy to commit indecent exposure while we were making Mondo Trasho. And the whole thing was ridiculous. Divine escaped in a two-piece gold lamé outfit driving a 59 red Eldorado convertible, which doesn't say much for the police. They couldn't find Divine. We all got arrested. We had a trial. We got off. The Civil Liberties Union handled it. And the judge read us a poem when he let us off, "Go behind the door and sin no more." I mean, it was absolutely crazy.
You were recently admitted into the Ultimate Art House, which is the art museum. The Baltimore Museum of Art gave a retrospective of your movies. It must have been really controversial in Baltimore to have your movies, which are considered the ultimate in sleaze, in the museum.
You know, that was the scary thing. It was not that controversial. It came out, they had Grandma Moses before me. And it was a three-day retrospective. I had a black tie opening. There was editorials in the paper saying how wonderful I was for the city. And I thought, wow, these are the same movies I was afraid of getting arrested of 10 years ago. I just think people change. And if you stick around long enough, they can't get rid of you, then they'll honor you.
Let me read what the Baltimore Museum of Art put in its program to caution its patrons about what they were about to see if they chose to actually attend the screenings of your movies. It said, for filmgoers unfamiliar with the films of John Waters, it should be reported that some critics have described his work as sick, vile, stupid, and repulsive among their kinder adjectives. Waters himself has assigned his earlier films a self-imposed X rating. The museum and the Film Forum wish to advise their audience to take the self-imposed X rating seriously before deciding to attend. Do you think that scared away people or got their viewers?
No, I think that what it did, that I mentioned that. I said, don't you think you should at least, put something in. Suppose somebody comes that has no idea what it is, that's a museum member, and thinks it's a film about birds in Florida. And I think it served two purposes. One, it was a hype. It definitely was a gimmick, like you're not admitted till after the show starts. And secondly, for the few people that were undecided that their sensibilities might be flayed so much, So I think it didn't bother me at all, They asked me if I'd mind. I said, no, I thought maybe you should have done it in the first place. So it was really, received very well in Baltimore. The only person that came out and griped about it was the censor lady that used to hassle me for years that has been fired. She's no longer a censor board. And she came through with flying colors. She said she couldn't believe a municipal museum was using tax money for this and stuff. And then she said that I was responsible for every rape and mugging in Baltimore, which I guess was fair enough. But then she said that I was responsible for the dead rats in her cellar. And the reporter said, you don't mean that. She said, yes. Which I thought was, I couldn't have written a better line myself.
Who is the censor lady?
Her name is Mary Avera. Maryland was the only state in the country that still had a censor board. And every film that showed Maryland, she had to watch. And she could cut stuff. And she gave me hell for years. I had big arguments with her every time. She hated movies. She knew nothing about movies. And she would sit there and yell things like rear entry in her microphone. I think, rear entry? I've never even heard that term. And she said to me when she cut Pink Flamingo, she cut out sex but left in the end, which I found was a very odd community standard.
What do you think of the way films are censored? What's the procedure, first of all, when you submit a film for censorship?
There is nowhere anymore we have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be you gave her the film, and she sat there and watched it. And she would say, I don't want this, I don't want this. And if you didn't agree with her, you took her to court, which I did, and it was easy to win.
Does it strike you as strange that people who are responsible for censoring films like that get to see more of them than anybody else?
Well, the thing that's the most ridiculous is they helped me. She was my best press agent. If you really want to stop a film, you don't mention it. You don't pay it any attention. When any time they have pickets outside of a theater, that increases the box office, and you'd think that they would have figured that out by now. Tell people not to see something, and they'll pay any amount to see it.
You've been working in the prisons lately.
Yeah.
As a teacher, really.
It basically grew out of my fascination with going to murder trials. It was the next logical step. That I basically, there's something in me where I need the company of murderers about once a week. Because it really fascinates me. And I'm not saying I approve of murder or anything like that. It's the one thing I like to figure out why people do things. I've always been interested in abnormal psychology, all that kind of thing. And So I knew a person that taught there as a living, and he brought me in as a guest teacher a few times, and I showed my films. And I really wanted to get a job there. I thought it would be interesting, and it was, of course, irony to get a paycheck from the state of Maryland to rehabilitate people by showing them my films. I thought was rather strange. So I went to talk to the warden, who was a woman who was belied the big bird cage and that kind of female prison warden. And she was at first concerned I wanted to make like a documentary exposing the prison. I think this is a good prison. They're under psychiatric care. They have to keep up or they're put back in the bad prisons. So that's how it started. And I showed them all my films. My book, Shock Value, was required reading. I think it's the only college in the country that had my book as a textbook. And I got a lot out of it, and they got a lot out of it, I think. I don't think I was bad for them. I told them, look, everybody wants to murder somebody every once in a while, but don't do it. Draw it. Write a story about it. I said, these films are my crimes, only I get paid for it. And at first, they were kind of bewildered to hear that. But I don't think that's bad advice.
There's a lot of people who believe in a lot of sociologists who say that showing violent movies encourages people to be violent. And that showing movies about crime might encourage people to commit them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that, having worked with
prison? You'd be surprised at the films they show in prison. They show sometimes hardcore pornography, which shocked me. We talked about that. We had a whole class about that. I don't think my films are what they mean because they're comedies, but we're talking about things like maybe the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or something like that. And some of them said that some of the people that were really violent psychopaths would watch them the same way someone would watch pornography, to be turned on by them. And that is a question there's no answer to. I agree. But then nobody can see those movies because one person reacts like that. I don't think that's fair either. I mean, he can get turned on by that from turning on television, too. These people, some of them, when they saw the films, they acted just like my parents. They were very straight. They would say, why would you make a movie like that? But in the same way, I think they figured if I could make a living doing this on the streets, there was hope for all of them, I think, in the long run.
Whoever would have thought that your films would be used in a therapeutic, rehabilitative context?
Well, in a way, you think of it, the Pink Flamingos, if that can freak out society's outlaws, where that humor was more dangerous to them than the hideous things they did with guns and everything, that they could freak out people that did that maybe isn't bad, because they realized that you could use something like that to be antisocial, but it's not going to hurt anybody.
Two of the people who you've worked with a lot are Divine, who's a really big man who plays the leading lady in all your movies, and the late Edie Massey.
Yeah.
Did it ever seem like the joke was on them, especially on Edie, who...
I know
what... Here's what I'm asking, that they're both really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And in your movies would appear in really revealing clothes that would accentuate every fold in the flesh that would hang over their stomachs and thighs and rears. And you could interpret it as kind of making fun of their size.
I don't think I was. I really like people that society has branded as outsiders who turn what they're discriminated against into a militant style. And that's why the whole image of Divine came up. A person that is fat does not usually wear skin-tight cocktail dresses. With Edie, only in one movie was she dressed really like that, in Female Trouble, in her black leather suit. Edie, I think you could always tell in the films, I liked her. You know, and I did like Edie. I never thought I was making fun of Edie. I think Edie was a very gifted comedian in her own wacky kind of way. I don't think anybody could imitate her. I think she was like nobody else. She had a delivery that was like nobody else, and she had a voice like nobody else. Edith certainly was made to look grotesque sometimes, yes. But I think that you liked her still. I don't think that you were laughing at her. I hope not.
So you see it as different than, say, Fellini's use of grotesques in his movies?
I think Fellini loves his grotesque too, though. Have you seen this book, Fellini Faces? It's just all the people that have sent him resumes through the years, and it's unbelievable. I think he respects those people. I certainly do. I think that I don't want to look like that, I'll be honest. But, you know, Divine just lost 92 pounds. I'm so afraid he's going to end up real skinny, and we'll have to make the Karen Carpenter story. That'll be the only movie we can make.
Have you ever felt really alienated or like a grotesque? I mean, do you identify with people who were really on the fringe?
I respect those people, yes. I'm fascinated by those people. And sometimes the things I'm fascinated with, I am attracted and repelled by at the same time.
I can understand that kind of feeling.
That you think, oh, my God. I mean, when I see some people on the street, I think, how could they walk around looking like that and not realize how grotesque they look? But at the same time, I sort of respect them for it obviously means very much to them to look like that.
John Waters recorded in 1985. His film Pink Flamingos has been re-released in celebration of its 25th anniversary. Coming up from the archives, an interview with the film's late star, Divine. This is Fresh Air.